All right, happy afternoon, everybody. Hopefully you guys have all had a wonderful day so far, wonderful conference so far. This is a session, a panel session entitled Learn from MVPs. So everyone on the panel is a non-Microsoft employee, but a MVP in the SharePoint space. So we'd like to share with you our experiences, answer any questions that you guys have. So there's two ways you guys can ask us questions. You can tweet and use the hashtag BRK2255, and we'll pull those from Twitter. We also have mics throughout the room, and you guys can go to the mics to ask us questions. So as we're getting ready for the first question, we're kind of gonna go just very quickly. If you know anything about this panel, we all talk a lot. So we're gonna try to go very quickly and say who we are and kind of what is our area of specialty inside of SharePoint, and we will just start on the next slide and everybody can go. We'll go in order of the photos. So Ben, you're up first.
Awesome, so welcome. My name is Benjamin Nyland. I work at ShareGate, and I hope you're having a great day and great conference. I don't know what else to say. I guess my focus is anything non-development. Try to keep up with what's going on in Office 365 and make sense of everything going on with groups, with SharePoint, with OneDrive, with Yammer, with everything that is productivity, and try to help anyone that is trying to go towards Office 5, but SharePoint on-premises as well with hybrid models and things like this.
Yeah. So my name is Jennifer Mason. I work at Planet Technologies. My specialty in SharePoint is anything you can do out of the box. I like to tell everyone that I have an extreme allergy to syntax and semicolons. So I will do anything that you can do directly out of the box. I spend a lot of time in Office, SharePoint, groups, everything. It's kind of that productivity center right now. Anything that you use to be productive and do day-to-day work is where I kind of spend all of my time in my specialties.
I'm Sue Hanley, and I am a business analyst and information architect, and I do all things people when it comes to SharePoint. So I try to make it real.
Keep it real.
My name is Christian Buckley. Am I on here? No.
I don't think so.
You can go.
Did you forget to press
on? I plan that.
It says on.
Talk loud.
Nope, nothing.
Here, there we go. Yeah,
bring it on.
Not loud. I'm good. My name is Christian Buckley. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer for Beezy. My focus is really on the business value. A lot of people talk about how, like productivity, collaboration, social, those are my spaces. But a lot of people talk about how to do those things. I focus on why, and I talk to the business decision makers primarily.
So I'm the anchor at the bottom there. I'm Jason Himmelstein. I work for Rackspace, and I'm the Office 365 Advisory Services Manager, but I'm a SharePoint IT Pro and a BI guy.
All right, well, we have a few questions on Twitter, so I'm gonna start us out with those. I will probably not have every one of us answer every question, because you'll probably want us to get through more than, you know, one or two questions, but I will pass this one. We're gonna start, this one is gonna go to Sue first. So we're gonna start with Sue, put her on the hot seat. And the question is, they would like to hear, how do you position SharePoint with OpenText, Documentum, M-Files, Alfresco, et cetera, in terms of document management? So when you get one of those questions about document management, where does SharePoint fit into that big picture?
Okay, I hate to be cliche. I am a consultant, so there are two words in my answer. It depends. It's hard for me to do that outside of context, right? We really have to know what are you trying to accomplish? Also, where are you coming from? Who are your users? Who's the audience? What regulatory and compliance environment do you live in? What do you have to comply with? There's no one best way to position SharePoint against those products. What I'd rather start with, what are the outcomes you want to achieve, and how do each of those technologies address your particular areas of concern?
That's good. Anybody have anything to add to that one?
Can't say that was a great answer.
All right. This one's for you, Ben.
Oh.
I'm handing you a softball. They're asking, can someone please explain O365 group permissions to me? Because I'm totally confused.
Oh, awesome. So group's been a I've been following that since Ignite 18 months ago, because I was confused. And then for a while, I think many people were confused as well. We thought it was competing with SharePoint. And I think the message was clear this week. No, it is not a competing product. It is just a list of people. The thing about groups is that when you, you know, just like security groups, distribution lists that you may have before, it's a list of people that you put in AD or Azure AD. You don't see that, you're just creating a Office 5 group. The difference and where the magic happens is that it really goes through all the different products, knocks at the door of Exchange, knocks at the door of SharePoint, of Yammer, of Planner, of Power BI, and probably a lot more in the future. And when it knocks at the door, it says, hey, I just got this group of people that just started working, and I need something from you for them. And every product says, here's the equivalent of what I have that works for a team of people. So Exchange says, and what's really good is a mailbox and a calendar inside of it. And SharePoint says, well, I got a team site if you want. And Planner says, well, I got a new plan so you can work there. And Power BI says, I got a dashboard. And they are all linked to the group ID. So there is an important message there. We're centralizing the membership in one place. And automatically, they have access to all of these products. However, it doesn't mean that the products lose functionality. It's the full-blown SharePoint, and SharePoint's got its own permission management, and it's got its own permissions capabilities as well. So you could have members of the group, and then you might think, you know, I'd really like to work with someone outside of our organization. You have two choices. You can bring that external user into the membership of the group, and now they have access to all of these products because they're part of that group. But you could go to SharePoint and say, you know what? I just want to share that one document with this external user. So at this point, this is a SharePoint permission management. So the individual products, usually, and especially SharePoint, still have its permission management there. What the group does is encompass everything and allow you to centralize the membership in one place. So you have both, essentially. I hope that clears it up a little bit.
But can I just extend that? But if you're in a group, there's really essentially two permissions. You're the administrator of the group, mm-hmm. which means you have superpowers, or you're a member of the group, which means you have full contribute and edit. So
access.
What's different about group permissions is that you're in with full superpowers or full membership.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reader.
Exactly.
And so that, I think, is an important distinction
yeah.
about that particular way of collecting people.
Absolutely. If they're a member of the group, they're a member of the group. If you need to share a couple of files with people in a read-only format, then you go to SharePoint and you share that way with them. They're not a member of the group working with all of the different products or availabilities.
So the question was, what about a public group?
It's the same principle. It just means that the group is visibly available to everyone in the organization, and anyone can join the group. A private group is still visible in the organization, can be hidden with an additional PowerShell command line. It just means that you cannot just join the group whenever you feel like it. That is the difference between public and private.
So is there a possibility that what you were asking about was external access to groups?
No, I'm just saying that public group, anybody can go
read it. Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyone can be a member of it. That's what
anyone
makes it
can
public.
Be a member of a public group as well.
It's not a read. You're in or you're out. But when you're in, you're in.
I thought a public group external people could see the stuff inside without joining.
As well.
Yeah, right. Because that's sometimes that happens. I don't want to join the group. I just want to.
Please step to the microphones. This is being recorded.
Do you guys see using groups as just a way of, let's say, I have multiple site collections? Right, I just want to take one group and maybe give that group permissions to multiple site collections or sites, and just instead of adding users to a SharePoint group, adding a Office 365 group into a SharePoint group. And is that considered a best practice or a desired way of doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. You can use Office 5 groups like their security groups,
right.
but they've got a lot of added benefit to it.
Right. And so in that case, you could actually add an Office 365 group into the visitors group of some site collection.
Absolutely.
Right. And then they would only have read access.
Absolutely. You can even be in OneDrive for Business and need the input of a team in your organization and share it with the Office 5 group that is that team for a temporary amount of time. For
example. And then just one more follow-up. So does that mean that you do see envision creating Office 365 groups just for that purpose, just like I would create an AD group, right? It has nothing to do with, I don't want them to collaborate with each other. It's just a way of me grouping people together for access control to other site collections. Is that a normal use case?
I think you'll have to plan this and figure out what is the best way, because you are creating an email address, you are generating a mailbox, a calendar, a planner. So I think it'll vary, but you can definitely use them as security groups, yeah.
But would you consider that to be a best practice? I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. It's not just a list of people. Yeah. It's a list of people for the purpose of how you engage with it, but it's a list of people with stuff. I mean, it immediately empowers that list of people with the things that teams and groups of people typically need. But if you were just provisioning a group of people to, for example, provide access to other systems or other applications, the way we traditionally use AD groups. I mean, you guys are more technical than me, but I still think you're going to need an AD group for that purpose.
I think what you were asking is,
should I use an Office 365 group or an Outlook group to be my unit of permissioning for everything, all things under the sun? Dan, you might be able to better answer that question, but I don't think the answer to that question is yes.
No,
at least not right now, because it's not just a plain list.
Right.
It's a super empowered list of people that can be treated as a unit anywhere in the suite. That's the super empowering thing about it. It's every aspect of Office 365.
But I will just hop onto that, because sometimes we don't realize the power and the need for it. So it's going to vary, absolutely. I'll give you an example. In Office 365 groups, you can say, you know what, I would like to, for starting, I want to specify which Office 365 group is going to allow to create Office 365 group. So by default, anyone in the organization can create Office 365 groups. So you can say, you know what, I'm going to limit the power to create Office 365 groups to all of my power users in the different business units. And you could use an Active Directory group and say that's just a list of people. But by using an Office 365 group for that purpose, you could say, you know what, I'd really like to use, for example, Power Apps and Flow, right? So people can request a new group creation this way. And then that team of people can use Planner to organize the requests and organize which ones have been created in the week as well. So even though typically I would have created an Active Directory group, because I thought, well, it's just a list of people I want to grant power to, that team, regardless, may need in the future access to some other things. So it's going to come down to a lot of decision making and thinking, when do I need what? Absolutely.
All right.
Can I jump in real quick?
Really quick.
All right. So groups are a very complex thing. They're an ad hoc collaboration. They have all kinds of tools that are associated with it. They have a problem in terms of they're not a direct replacement for security groups because of your on-premise assets. Groups are cool, but watch your governance, do your research, and don't just go, hey, I can just use groups.
Absolutely.
It's much more nuanced than that.
I know you want to move on. I just want to say something kind of backing up a bit around this as well, is that there's a reason why we talk about kind of the basic permissions of groups. And the social nature of the capability and kind of the flattening of, there's a lot of complexity there of what you can do, but just groups in and of themselves having those kind of two levels and then the public side of that, just like Yammer has the very simple side of that, is because the more controls you put in place, the less people will use those to collaborate. We get into the complexity and how we can go in and restrict and control. And when I hear that, I think less and less people will then actually use what you're putting together. Be very careful with that.
Simply put, right tool for the right job.
Yeah. And it's early. I mean, that's another thing to say too, even with groups and how groups are going to engage with team sites and where it's going to go. It's an early space to watch and see what's happening. So I think as we give Microsoft feedback, as we go into user forums and as we go into user voice, different things like that, and give feedback, we might start to see some of those things change. So it's a space to definitely be watching and things to definitely consider now. So we'll go to the mic and get the next question.
Yeah, that's a nice entry for my question.
Perfect.
I have a big question for you.
Okay.
How long are we going to build our intranet and portals in SharePoint UI and UX? And when are we going to do that in Office 365?
So that one's a really hard question. I'll kind of take that one and then let other people chime in with that one as well. If you guys have been here any point in time at this conference, you guys all know the phrase, the internet in the pocket. And we've got new SharePoint sites, and we've got new team sites, and we've got all of these different things. And I honestly feel when I look at the roadmap and when I look at what's coming and just what they've announced this week, the future is going to change in how we do things. There's a lot that's just been rolled out with the SharePoint. The SharePoint framework. That was awesome. That was awesome. Yeah, there's a lot that has just been rolled out that's going to change how we create pages, how we do things, how we interact and work with it. And so I think that we're going to start to see those pieces come together with a cohesive solution. So right now, I think there's a way, if you need an internet now, you're going to be able to do things that you can do on-prem that you cannot do on Office 365. But as we move forward, there's going to be a ton of very rich feature-specific things inside of Office 365 that are going to make that experience combined with all of the other pieces to truly give you that intranet in your pocket type scenario. So it's one to definitely watch. I believe it was Adam did a whole session on it. I don't remember the breakout number, but you could look it up, where he talks about the future of intranet portals and different things like that, and that would probably be a great session to go and dig into to get those details.
I was going to say, there's also a great session that I went to today on the publishing framework. Okay. And I think that's really, when we think of intranet, it's what we're really talking about is the publishing framework. And although every time I asked this question, no one was giving me like specific dates and what should I do now. There was a specific date. There was a very specific roadmap slide, Dan, that was shared in that session that Andy and Dave shared, and it looks really like H1, H2, 2017 is what we're sort of looking for. And so the real question is, what do you do now? And the answer, of course, is it depends on what you need to do now. Do you need to deliver something now? There's a lot of options that you have. Can you wait for Microsoft to deliver the things I'm looking forward to, like two-column page layouts and all those other, and publishing pages? Well, that's sort of that's definitely on the roadmap. And I'm super excited about that.
There's maybe one thing I can add. I see a difference after May the 4th, when SharePoint 2016 was introduced in San Francisco. And what I saw before that, and I always draw it like this, Office 365 and SharePoint was pushed to the middleware. Mm-hmm. That was what we heard 18 months ago, mostly in Chicago. And what I heard in May the 4th is that SharePoint getting his face back again, the new team sites, with just a blob, whoop, so on the same line as Office 365.
Yeah, I think that all of the messaging that came out of the May 4th event came from the feedback of the unintentional consequences of everyone thinking SharePoint was dead. And everyone kept saying, SharePoint's dead, it's Office 365. And then May 4th, SharePoint came back with a big bang, and it's not dead. It's not anywhere close to dead. And constant innovation and constant new things coming and changing. And so a lot of that is based on the feedback that they got from the community. When they started, they watch, they listen, they're on User Voice, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they see what we're saying. They take that feedback in and then bring that message back. So I think all of us would agree that May 4th event brought life back to it.
So I can say, when I'm out talking with customers, every one of my customers is looking at Office 365 as an option for their intranet. Yep. With all the new features, with everything that's been coming, the fact that SharePoint 2016 with Feature Pack 1 is going to have so much more than it did, but not knowing when feature packs are going to roll, they're looking at it and saying, how do I get all of this really cool new good stuff as quickly as I can, because we've been waiting on this. We've been sitting here on 2010 for a while, and we were kind of nervous to move to 2013 because we heard rumblings. So as they're looking at, they're starting that plan, and they're saying, they're looking at, as Microsoft is doing their futures, and saying, there's a lot of good stuff happening there. The May 4th event really turned some heads and said, they stopped and said, we want to talk more about the intranet and, you know, being up in Office 365 and less about it being on-prem now. Because, okay, there are options around branding, and there, you know, it's not the full-blown story that I have on-prem, but, you know, let's take a look and see what we can do. What is it that we have options for? So a lot more people are investigating Office 365 for their intranet in my world than they are coming back and saying, oh, we definitely have to stay on-prem. Right. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean on-prem is being left behind. I think the messaging, I loved the messaging, I think it was Jeremy Masner's session, No Site Left Behind. And I think the messaging is, if you need to be on-prem, we're going to support you on-prem for as long as you need to be on-prem. And I think that's a really powerful message. Now, the real question is, who needs to be on-prem? So I live in Washington, D.C., or in the Washington, D.C. area. So as you might imagine, I actually kind of am familiar with some of the federal space. I have a DoD client looking at moving their email to the cloud. So it's not, you know, it's not just for private sector companies anymore. I have a federal civilian agency that is 100% all in Office 365. They do not even have a file share. So I think it would be irresponsible to not think about the cloud as an IT organization, but that doesn't mean that every organization is ready to go there right now. And I love the commitment from Microsoft that we hear you, we know that, and we're gonna we're gonna give you what you need for as long as you need it. No firm deadline, and you know that this may not be the last time you see us.
That was an important messaging change. And I think it was, intentional of Microsoft to go to change the messaging that way. Because there are certain people, individuals at Microsoft, like Bill Baer, when they made this at Ignite last year, they said, look, it's not dead, mm-hmm. we're gonna continue. They changed some of the wording around that. You have people like Bill Baer who just said, like, I've always told you it's not going away. It's growing, it's still building, that's out there. But a lot of the things, the foundational things that were being built, the infrastructure of Office 365, made it feel, and especially like Ben, maybe like for the ISVs too, like it was getting constricted. We can do less and less. And now we're starting to see that next phase, and the messaging is opening up. There's more that the ISVs can do. There's more that you can do as a customer that are going to enable organizations to move to that vision.
Well, I did get one question that didn't make it to the mic, and I'll explain it because, well, it's a really great question. If you're not familiar with May 4th, and we keep mentioning May 4th, May 4th, there was a SharePoint event hosted by Jeff Tepper called The Future of SharePoint. And they came out to San Francisco, they did a virtual event, and they basically shared the State of the Union about SharePoint. And a lot of us just keep referring back to that as the May 4th event.
It's also the Star Wars Day.
It was. May the 4th be with you. All right, so we're gonna take a question at the mic, and then I've got a couple of really good ones on Twitter, so we'll go over here for your question.
Okay, thanks. I don't want to belabor the SharePoint on-prem point. However, I know Microsoft and the two of you up there say, we're here to support you, but the sessions in this conference do not show that. I mean, you can say that, but I have a pretty big effort to migrate my SharePoint 2010 on-prem to SharePoint 2016 on-prem for the next year and a half. And I brought 5 of my team members to this conference, and I'm very disappointed. Very. I mean, there's no session content for on-prem. And if you do get something, you get like one slide. And it's, you know, it's all Office 365, SharePoint Online. You don't get this on-prem. I talk to the speakers afterwards. So they may be supporting it, but they're really not showing much interest in, you know, how are we moving forward? Because I do work for a very large manufacturing company, 45,000 plus people, and it's our intranet, and we're moving forward at least the next 5 years. And it's not my decision in my place in IT where I am to tell my CIO that he has to go to the cloud, because he's not going.
Yeah.
So I have to support on-prem, and tell me some stuff that I can do to help me along.
I think a lot of it's perspective. And as painful as this sounds, and when we start to look at it, it's not that they're not developing for SharePoint on-prem, they're leading with cloud first. And so what that ultimately ends up meaning is that stuff is going to make it to Office 365 that is then going to roll into on-prem. And when you start looking at 2016, they've made a lot of infrastructure changes. They've made a lot of changes there, and we'll let you guys talk through a lot of those too. But they make those changes that are gonna enable them over the next year or so to continually push things out via feature packs, via different things like that. And so the foundation is there for that, but it's always going to be the stance of cloud first. They can get things out quickly, and then from there, they can package it up and get it on-prem. So it's a different way of looking at things, and we feel your pain, and we kind of feel the frustration with it. I know Jason is like dying to get out of his seat, so talk.
I don't know if you're able to make it to either of my two on-prem SharePoint 2016 sessions, one about migrating from on, you know, from previous versions. We specifically talked about 2010 and 2013 migrating to 2016. That was on Tuesday. Todd Clinton and I did that session. So if you didn't get a chance, it's already online. It's already, you can go watch, see the slides, the whole thing. I'll stick around afterwards if you want to have a conversation. Happy to talk to you. We just finished doing a session 2.5 hours ago about performance and deploying and best practices and all of that as well in the Sydney Marcus Auditorium. So, you know, did that one. That one was BRK 3035, I think it was. So we just finished doing that. Both of them were 75-minute sessions. I know Neil Hodgkinson has had several sessions throughout the week, you know, talking some about MinRoll, talking about SharePoint on Azure, so depending upon where you're actually deploying the bits, because that's still on-prem, folks. Even though it's you're deploying it on Azure, your on-prem is a bits concept, right? You're installing a .exe, it's on-prem. No matter where you put it, you know, if you put it on Rackspace, if you put it on Azure, it's still on, if you put it in your data center, your closet, under your desk, whatever, that's still SharePoint on-prem. So all of that, the conversation has been happening here. Sorry that we've, you know, haven't had a chance to connect and get you having those right conversations, but that's one of the really nice things about this conference is all of the content is becoming accessible online. The Tuesday sessions were posted yesterday. People were tweeting me saying they've already been watching them. So you won't miss getting to hear the content and be able to communicate with us after the fact as well. We're all on Twitter and, you know, through the conference, there's a second screen option there that's through the Microsoft community that you can post questions, and we're out there taking a look at them as well. I know that there were some issues about trying to get into Tuesday's room, but, you know, hopefully you'll still be able to get all of that content.
Just to get on to the message, sorry to interrupt.
It's okay.
I just wanted to, because the it's important, very important to realize, I think, is that everything that they talked about relating to SharePoint, and they may have said SharePoint Online because that's where it's coming out right now. This whole new modern SharePoint, everything changing in terms of the user experience, the new document library, the right-clicking, the OneDrive for Business, everything that is happening is coming. It's SharePoint 2016 as well. It's just that right now, they're packaging it and then sending it to your share. The huge value of SharePoint 2016 is the ability to continuously update it with the feature packs. They announced here that the feature pack that was supposed to come next year, you're getting it right now in November, and you're getting the new SharePoint from a couple of months ago in Office 365. So everything you saw, including the SharePoint framework, the new way to develop and benefit from these new, I'm not a developer, so I'm not gonna go over too deep onto it, but that is also coming to SharePoint 2016 on-prem. So all of the sessions that you've seen on the new modern SharePoint sites and the SharePoint framework on developing, that is for SharePoint 2016 as well. Hopefully that message comes across as well.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking when you said that you have a gift. I have clients who are not going to SharePoint 2016, that they're stuck on 2013. So I think what you're offering to your organization by being positioned to get the richness of Office 365 as it's pushed down to 2016, because remember, SharePoint 2016 is the first version of SharePoint born in the cloud. And so now you are positioned to take advantage of all the goodness. It's not going first, and Microsoft's been very transparent about that. But it's not also going to be, you're not going to wait 3 years to get it. So I actually think you should look, I mean, I do understand your pain. It's an absolute legitimate complaint, and I don't want to discount it. But you are offering all of your users the benefit of getting some of this richness way sooner than they would get if you didn't go from 2010 to 2016.
So the 2016, sorry, just to finish my comment from
before.
So just to finish my comment from before, the things that there have been some big announcements for SharePoint 2016 on-prem here, Ben hit on the head. Feature Pack 1 is massive. The fact that they pulled it in, the fact that they've been listening, the new way of doing MinRoll, we've affectionately been dubbing Mini MinRoll, that is a dramatic change from what they announced at RTM. And it's completely different in that we've talked about it at length at this conference. And you know, there's lots of blogs and posts and all sorts of stuff out there. One of the things that you'll start to see as a result of now everything coming out of embargo is a lot of those of us who've been holding back comments and posts and blogs, you'll start to see a lot of that coming out. So hopefully you've had a chance not only to come to some sessions, but some of the networking as well. Hopefully you got an opportunity to meet some people and have those conversations. Because the value of being here, there's that also, of getting to see what is net new. before anybody else does. So definitely, before we leave, make sure we get a chance to talk.
And I was just going to add before Ben so incredibly rudely interrupted, Leslie, you know, another benefit, though, of looking what's happening with Office 365, you're getting to preview the roadmap for on-prem. Clearly, not everything will fit the on-prem model for that, but there's discussion happening as those are coming out to Office 365, so you really know what's going to be in those feature packs. You're getting much better visibility into what's coming, and better so that you can better plan for that next version for on-prem as well.
All right, we are going to go over here for a question, and then I'm going to go to Twitter.
This is actually it's not a question, but it is an observation that someone brought up about the messaging thing. It crystallized for me. I remember the keynote from Ignite in Chicago. I was really struck by two things as a SharePoint person. I was, first of all, separate from SharePoint, but I was really struck by, very deliberately, people using Apple products on stage, like at the keynote. Like, that was clearly top of mind for Microsoft. And then the other thing I noticed was, like, every time they would talk about, I'm going to take this file from, they'd always talk about OneDrive for business, just over and over and over. And SharePoint never mentioned. So it has been a very satisfying 18 months to come from that point where I was like, am I in the wrong business? Like, you know, what's happening to where we're, May the 4th.
And so, anyway. I can say that too, because I write extensively on the messaging, as the Microsoft folks probably are aware of, and the lacking nature of some of the messaging, the mistakes. I would say that, not speak for Microsoft, they recognize the mistakes made in the messaging around that. And I think why that, especially with the May 4th event, tried to just make it so clear. And I think Tipper even like talked about it. Like we kind of messed up on that. We let it get away from us. And so I think it kind of misrepresented what was actually happening in the conversation. And so they are trying to make that a lot more transparent, which I think is excellent. And it's, they're doing that with the MVP community, asking for input, but also because of this cycle, how it sped up. We're able to see how our feedback as users, as a community, as admins, as MVPs, providing that feedback, it's a much quicker response because of that cycle, but we're also then seeing and talking about those things which will affect both online and on-prem.
So I'm gonna hop us over to Twitter and ask a question. I love this question, and we're gonna go ladies first. So we'll start with Sue. For each of the panelists, what is a new feature on SharePoint Online that you are most excited about, and why?
Oh my God.
You're gonna take mine. I know you're gonna take mine, Sue.
That's why I said ladies first, so Sue and I can go first.
It's hard to pick just one. It's like picking my favorite child. But I'll share one that I'm super excited about. I really like the OneDrive all about me focus. So I can go to one place and see all the documents that I'm actively working on, all the things that matter to me from one place. And that one place doesn't have to be my file explorer on my Surface, or it could be on my phone, or it could be on my iPad. And so I do think the world revolves around me, and I kind of like that Microsoft finally recognizes that.
Oh, that is awesome, Sue. So I'm going to emphasize the word new here, because I have so much hope in these features, but it's still yet to be seen. So it's a space that I continue to watch, and that's Flow and Power Apps and their integration in SharePoint Lists. I am so excited about what the potential could be. I know that there's still gaps, and believe me, I'll talk about those gaps all you want, just not on here. We'll talk about them, we'll have a drink, we'll commiserate together. But they're coming, and that team is so passionately trying to understand, the SharePoint team teaming up with them, trying to get us the solution that we need. And so when I think of new features that are coming, and we've already starting to see Flow integrating in SharePoint List and Power Apps, and I'm so excited about that. So if I had to pick one feature right now, that would be it. We're gonna go to Ben.
Awesome. I would say, obviously, I'm a big groups guy, so definitely the whole thing about groups, the connected SharePoint, full site collection to groups. The reality that I see within our own organization and even an organization all over Montreal when we visit them is that you can't just deliver one thing and expect everyone in the company to always work with that one thing for every scenario, every project. And we did that with SharePoint. We tortured it. We always stretched it out as far as we could to try and do something that it was not meant to be. So the idea that I can go to my team place, my group's place, and I can go to my team site to work on my files, to create some team news, then I can jump to my Outlook calendar and place the events that I can overlay and add to my own personal calendar, and then I can jump to Planner and do some cards management. Or I can do some things in SharePoint, and I can extend SharePoint the way that I want with a new SharePoint framework. So as a team, I really have the choice to work the way that I want. People always ask me, but now there's Yammer conversation or Outlook conversation. I'm like, as long as they're working in Office 365 in an environment that I control, and when they leave, I still have access to that information, I don't care where they're having a conversation. As long as that team, I can always find it. So I'm really, really happy to see that come together and that vision come together.
Feature Pack 1. Sorry, that's not a SharePoint Online thing. For me, it was the security, the new security settings that were demoed in the sub keynote that Jeff Teper did. Being able to go in and keep people from on non-domain joined machines, save, copy, and print, that was huge. That's been something that my customers have been asking for years. And the other one, you know, right alongside of that was being able to say, I only want this range of IPs to be able to access. That absolutely enormous. There are customers who have been terrified of people being able to access things from external, but they want the features of Office 365. This can give them that capability, and to me, that was something that we've been begging for so long, and it came out. So not quite there yet, but it's coming. So.
Christian.
Yeah, and I thank you for not taking the other one that we were talking about earlier. So I mean, so kind of surface through like the people card, you know, that but it's really the graph experiences and the functionality that's then surfaced from that. Now, I've worked with social graphs for a long time in other companies and competitors, the IBM-ish type companies that around the concept, and it's the first time that it's really we're seeing like the fruits of that. Of the social graph in a way that has that business context. Being able to do things that are as simple as, you know, floating over somebody's name and see, of course, with Skype integration, being able to see their presence awareness and be able to contact them, but also see the things that are in context to our relationship, the communities that we're a member of, the groups that we're a member of, the projects that we're working on, the latest content that they're working on. It's just gonna get more and more intelligent so I don't have to do as much work to get work done.
How about their availability so I can call them up if I want to?
That's what I said. Yeah. Presence awareness and
love it. No, their schedule. Like, so you know if they're busy or not. That's huge.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. I call them anyway.
We've got a great question online from Twitter for Jason, but I'm going to get this guy and then we're going to go back to that. So you just be ready for our one. All right, what's your question, sir?
Thank you. It's my understanding that InfoPath 2013 and SharePoint Designer 2013 will be the last versions rolled out of those two applications. No tears lost on InfoPath 2013, but I can say that we use SharePoint Designer 2013 and 2010 in the past and 2007 before that to create more configured, more heavily configured workflows. Mm-hmm. So with Flow seeming to replace or fill in a gap of workflow creation without having to use Visual Studio, but Flow not, again, to my understanding, being supported for on-premise solutions, I know we can still use Designer 2013 in 2016, but how supported is that, and what can we do?
Yeah, this is one of the hardest questions, and I just feel sadness every time I have to answer it, because I know it's not the answer that everybody wants to hear. They're working on tools. New tools are going to come. Flow and Power Apps are not those tools yet, and SharePoint Designer and InfoPath are still supported. Till was it 2026?
Yeah.
Is that so? 2026. And so I think if you keep watching that space in interest, it's coming. And they're really trying to, and something that I really respect about the teams is all of the teams are coming together and not trying to solve the problem of I need a replacement for InfoPath or I need a replacement for SharePoint Designer, but really trying to understand how are we actually working and what are the things that we need to do, and then giving us the appropriate tools to get them done. So you're gonna see them coming up in stages. And unfortunately, the answer for today, which is I know probably not what you wanted to hear, but that's really the reality of it. So you have options to look at third-party tools, to use those tools that are available, you know, as they are. I still use InfoPath. I still use SharePoint Designer when I need to. I just use it smartly so I know what the limitations are and just keep waiting to see what's coming next, and that's really still the same.
I may be mistaken, I'm not 100% sure, but I thought I saw a blog post about Flow working with on-premises now, so you could use Flow with your on-premises environment as well. The gateway is installed, and not unlike Power BI worked with on-premises.
All right, so nobody can, they're recording the session, so if you're not speaking at a mic, they can't hear us, so just go to the mic if you're gonna,
there's been a lot of announcements this week, so it's kind of hard to keep up with exactly every single one of them, but the data gateway is where they're starting to put all of that. Yeah. Power BI was the first thing, but they're, Power Apps and, Flow is definitely out there and is coming through the same way. So.
And there was a previous session right before this one where they actually literally said, Flow is the replacement for SharePoint 2013 workflows, and Power Apps are the replacement for InfoPath. It was very, very literal.
It's not one-to-one mapping yet of the functionality,
Yeah, they said they're working on it, but they were very literal in that session.
Again, MVPs, not product team members. Yeah.
And I think it's the one-to-one mapping of features. You know, you can tell me all day long it matches, but if I can't do the exact same things, it's not a total replacement. So that's why I said I'm super excited about it. I think it's coming. It's not totally there yet, so there's still cases where you need to use the other tools. Yeah. Awesome. Yes, sir.
One quick comment, if I may, and one question. From a developer's perspective, I know there's been a lot of talk about the May 4 event and that being a real turnaround for SharePoint, but wow, from a developer's perspective, Microsoft has done a complete 180 by embracing the open source community and going to open source tools and letting developers work where they tend to develop. And that's given us so much because now you can do the so much more client side and JavaScript and all that, and making SharePoint just that much faster, more feature rich. That's just, congratulations and thank you, Microsoft, for that. My question, I hope it's not too much of a one-off. We have a lot of content, I'm afraid, invested in Alfresco Share, and we are moving to SharePoint Online. Migrating that content, what do you recommend? Do we try to automate that, programmatically or somehow pull that content across into SharePoint team sites, et cetera? Or do we tell our customers, just build your new site from scratch in SharePoint because it's so cool and easy and intuitive?
Everybody's looking at me.
I spent a few years in the space. I'll let you go first.
I'm not as familiar, to be very honest with you, with Alfresco. In terms of migration, as we said earlier, and I did a session on with Simon Bordage about migration in general and the processes. So if you have time, another hour and 15 minutes, definitely check it out. But it always looks, we always like to start from scratch. We always like to start fresh, but the reality is you might want to migrate some of the content and benefit from what SharePoint has to offer. Fortunately for me, it's a little bit hard right now because I don't know what you got with Alfresco, so perhaps Christian, you want to help out?
A lot of documents in document libraries in Alfresco and a lot of wiki pages.
So I think that there's, obviously understanding how the technology, how things map across. When I joined Microsoft back in 2006 and I was part of what is now Office 365, it was called Microsoft Managed Services, became BPOS, then got rebranded as Office 365. One of the primary things we were doing were the internal migrations over there, as well as then as we were onboarding customers into the platform. I had customer number two on the SharePoint side. I don't know if there's still a customer on that side. It was, as we were building the product, it was in interesting times. Anyway, but for that migration process, what we took out of that, what worked the best about is rebuilding it anew and as much as possible, let the owners of those sites move across, because there's the purge, the cleanup process as part of that. But where we had the best user experience, and it's like there are great tools to do that, and there's Ben can talk to you about that, whether it'll work with Alfresco or not, but grabbing that content and moving it in volume across. But however, by giving that to the people who own that content, let them do that cleanup part of the process, is where it's been most successful from an end user. We got what we want at the end result of that.
So even if it means file download from one system and then upload into
well,
the other,
do you really want to keep those files? I mean, this you get one and only one chance to move into your new house.
So the other thing is stop creating new sites in Alfresco first. Start creating new sites into SharePoint. Okay. As you're doing that, I call it the push versus the pull. Right? As people are seeing all of the awesome new features that the people who are using SharePoint are getting, instead of having to push people to SharePoint, they're going to pull you and say, give me that. Yeah. I'll do whatever it takes. I don't care. I'm tired of this. I want that. Give me the cool things. Right? That's what they want. It's a different operation when you're dealing with it that way, because they'll look at it and say, I don't need all of this. I'll move my stuff myself. Yeah. Or different type of operation from a migration perspective.
Because they're looking at the new through the lens of their old system, that may recreate some of the same problems in the new environment. So that's another reason I agree with that. Build new, stop building new over the old system.
Awesome. I'm going to go to Twitter next because this question has been here for a while, and I think it's a good one because it's very tactical. All right, so Jason, I'm going to start with this one for you, and then we can go back out. Let's say that you have a document library that becomes out of control. So 5,000 documents, folders everywhere, files everywhere. How do you go about attacking it to figure out what do you do to fix it, to troubleshoot when things start happening?
Just delete it all.
Great.
Just delete the whole
thing. Game over.
I'm kidding. That's the old server way. If you're having a problem, you just unplug it at the backup server. But you talk. First, have a conversation with the people who, number one, if you can find an owner, you can't always find an owner because something that gets that out of control probably doesn't have an owner. But you can go through and take a look and see who has the most content in there, who's been touching everything, who's been doing all this stuff. Find the last used, top 15 people who've been using this, document library, and go have a conversation with them. See why they're doing it, because most likely there's a reason, and that reason could be as bad as we just didn't know any better, or it could be as good as why we have something that we're doing and it's really critical that we're doing it this way. Once you have that understanding, then you can start to make a plan. It's got to be, you have to have a strategy around these things, because if you just go in and start moving stuff, users freak out. As good as search can be, they're not going to search for things. If they have that many folders, they're going and looking for things in the places that they know that they are. Secondarily, I look for tools. Whether or not I can go through and if I purchase a tool, look for a free tool, going down the PowerShell route.
You mean like ShareGate?
I was gonna let him have his own moment, but the tooling that's out there, I say it very frequently, migration is not just a one-time thing. Especially in a hybrid scenario, you're gonna be continuing to move things around. In an on-prem scenario where you're trying to move things, if you have organizational change, you're gonna need to have these type of operations to go through and do a cleanup. There are some really fun ways of going through and finding age of documents and seeing what you can get rid of. Set some policies and actually get rid of documents that shouldn't be around after they haven't been touched for so long. Move them off to an archive. But never do it until you've actually done the investigation to try and figure out who you should be talking to and who should be an owner of these things. And on the tools front,
There's tools. I just want to hop onto something that I heard in the question I heard 5,000 documents and out of control in the same sentence in the question. And 5,000 is a view threshold, and we can manage that beforehand. SharePoint 2016 added the automatic indices of lists to be able to not have that problem. But a library can have up to 30 million documents, so I hope you don't approach that. 5,000 doesn't mean bad or out of control necessarily. And thankfully, we do have now the copy button that's directly in the UI that allows you to reorganize your content in your document libraries. If it does go to another document library, just be mindful that you lose the metadata and the permissions. But at least we have that option directly in the interface. So just wanted to add that as well.
I call that a teachable moment. Yeah. Right? So if it's really, really out of control, you do all the things that Jason said, and you have a conversation about how do you use this information. And we try to think about how to organize it. And trying to remember that the F word isn't really a dirty word anymore. You're allowed to use folders to organize your content, because if you want to take your content offline, you're going to need it organized in folders, but let's think about, can we organize our folders to be smart by having metadata applied when I drop something in that folder, so be smart about how we use them. And one very tactical approach, if something's totally out of control and you can't find an owner, and you know you can't get people to delete that content, you're gonna have to pry it out of their cold, dead hands, what you might wanna do is lock it down for content contribution, create your new to-be environment based on all those conversations that Jason recommended that you have. You migrate in what is active, current, and that the current owner of that content knows that they use. You leave everything else in an archive, and after, if it hasn't been looked at in X amount of time, I think you're pretty safe, unless it's on legal hold or there's a record retention policy on it. I bet you could delete it. Right.
We're gonna move to the next question, but Christian, the next question goes to you first.
Oh, yay.
I don't even know what it is, but we're gonna push it there. We're gonna come over here, and then I'll get the other two right after that.
So we utilize a ton of solutions that have been developed based on a lot of this fancy stuff you guys have been talking about for years, right? So content types, most of it's based with out of SharePoint as a foundation, but we're syncing it. We've got, you know, utilized document information panels in our office applications that are fire 8 million workflows that go all over the place. We've published those templates to their client app. It's like beautiful in 2013. We had some users surprise get their computer back with 2016, stuff started breaking. We rolled them all back, but we just signed our Office 365 EA like 3 weeks ago, and now I'm terrified. Like, what's gonna happen to all those fancy schmancy cross-platform like program like integrations that make things auto-magically beautiful, just like fairies? Is that gonna work?
Christian's like,
I love the I love the question. I love the fact that Christian has to answer it.
You can give a pass if you.
It's the longest he's ever been silent in his life.
I was trying to not start this phrase with it, but it's two words. It depends on what they are. You know, look, it's. I mean, there's no such thing as a clean migration. There's no such thing as a clean move around that. It all depends on what you did, what they are, what is supported, what could be movable. You know, and I've been out of the migration space for a couple of years, and so those kinds of conversations and looking at all of the detail of what moves and doesn't move around those customizations. But I mean, you know, you guys can get into more detail of kind of where things are. Most recently, but prioritize, I would say, my background is, I started as a business analyst and a project manager. I take that approach when I go and look at those kinds of problems of what are the high priority, start there, look at those sites, move them across, find out if they were breaking from those initial moves. Were you piloting when you moved that over, or?
It was done with nobody's knowledge. Like, they sent their computer in to get fixed and it came back 2016.
But so I'm a huge advocate of piloting that out. Take a high priority where you have a lot of those business critical customizations, you know, and go and look at what that looks like in the new environment and look at what's breaking, what's not moving over from that, and then start to have conversations about what can be recreated with the out of the box capability. There's things that are different. There's more power in a lot of cases there. What do you need then to go, and do you need to build it, buy it, or do without it? Make some decisions there. But you know, obviously not all at once. It's going to take a lot of time and planning to go through and understand what that impact is.
And I'm sorry, and to add on to the question, just a little like kind of caveat. Yeah. If you could also speak to any tools or resources that I could look at. I mean, I'm fine, you know, reading lots of things, looking places, but we're also going to be hybrid forever, right? I mean, we just started. So if you're looking at Office 365 for, you know, some client, you know, some individuals or users, and you have Office, you know, local clients for some, you have SharePoint 2013 on-prem now, maybe 2016 on-prem later, maybe, you know, online. Like, all of those things, instead of having, I'm hoping I don't have to have a team just, like, physically check every single solution every time a small piece is changed again. Mm-hmm. So like, if there's a tool or any resource that can kind of predict, I talked to the telemetry guys and he was very confused. Ben, I gave him your name to call you. because like I didn't know.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have anything.
To answer a bit of your first question as well, SharePoint 2013 and 2016 and SharePoint Online, the plumbing is pretty much the same in the sense that the workflows that you've created, and again, it will depend on what you've built, but that experience of migration is relatively fine when you're going in terms of SharePoint. So the things that you've built, you're not going to lose them. The alerts, the workflows, the InfoPath forms, you'll still be able to benefit from them and use them, and then eventually find a path of using the new things like Flow and Power Apps to replace them. But you will still be able to migrate. The one thing is custom solutions. If you have custom code in a WSP and a sandbox solution, because in SharePoint Online, you can't put your sandbox solution to have code anymore. It can't run in there. But generally speaking, you'll be fine. And in a hybrid model as well, everything will be fine. It'll be looking at the user experience in terms of, are you okay with going from this team site that looks like this, going to that other team site that looks like that. The hybrid is really right now connecting the two through search, through the auditing. But in terms of your migration and testing everything out, I'm pretty confident that yes, you will have to plan and you will have to pilot some of those scenarios that are more realistic scenarios. But realistically speaking, you'll be okay. The reason why most likely the Office 2016 update, you've had perhaps a bad experience is that there isn't InfoPath installed with Office 2016. And the document information panel is InfoPath. So if you don't have InfoPath, then you cannot have the document information panel. But I think I understand the moment of, oh no, we gotta go back, but it doesn't mean that your entire migration is gonna be this way. In terms of SharePoint, it'll be okay. In terms of resources, send me an email, I got 20,000.
Depending on those customizations they did. But there, I mean, the tools in ShareGate has this, that have some pre-migration analysis capability to help you identify. So if you do have those customizations, so those are the things that you may have problems
and
with.
And it's free.
So it is so much easier now to go and identify where those are. And so it doesn't just cause a migration to fail and cause other problems. That you can identify, hey, there's this piece that we built. Oh, these other sites, we didn't realize it was also using that and identify those sites.
Right. And to be fair, Microsoft released an assessment tool to migrate as well, for free.
I understand that the cross integration between Office and the SharePoint side. I feel your pain. I understand what you're saying. It's not a SharePoint question. That really is in the Office suite. And yeah, the dip's gone. So I know there's some Microsoft folks in the room who are hearing your pain. They're hidden, distributed throughout the room, but they're hearing it, and they do listen to the sessions as well. So make sure you give them the feedback.
All right, we're gonna go. You've been standing so long. Thank you.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity here.
We can't hear
you. I don't think the mic's hot. Mic
over there.
Hello.
Maybe go to the.
Maybe just.
Sorry.
Let Martin go.
Okay. Well, one of the most cool things that were released this week was the ability to sync document libraries with using the next-gen sync client. This brings us in a very important moment in history that we can finally stop using file servers. What would be your one advice to customers who are planning to kill their file servers and start using SharePoint document libraries?
Be careful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say necessarily, there are many scenarios where you will probably still need the file share for different file types. I know we've had some experience with Access databases, right, that in SharePoint don't necessarily work and behave the expected way. So don't. We're not here to say no more file shares and go to everything SharePoint.
CAD files.
There's gonna be a lot of CAD files. And. Yeah, because I know there's a lot of questions, but we're not saying get rid of your file shares. Test, plan,
pilot
for the Office
group,
files, it's fine for working in the productivity suite, but there are certain scenarios where there will still be the file share for some time, nonetheless.
Legacy app that depends on like
You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot, I think, that they'd say to that. So I think most people would say plan, do pilot groups. There may be certain scenarios where an entire organization can do that and it works just based on the culture and what they're doing within that organization, but I think it's more hybrid for a long time.
I'm going to play the cynical card for just a minute. I think it's great. I'm super excited about all the new stuff, the stuff that they trickled out and showed us the last second of, you know, look, we're going to be able to see everything that's there, but maybe not have everything have to be local. Super cool. How many of you have been burned by OneDrive in the past? Mm-hmm. I'm not trusting it quite yet. I want to see it working for a while. So the caution thing, I'm excited. I'm passionate about it. I think it's going to be great, but I can't tell everybody, go jump in it with both feet immediately. There, you have to give it some time and see how things go. That testing comment, we have to try it. We really have to field test it, get it out in the hands of everybody in the world, and make sure that everything's perfect.
You know what, just really quick.
Just comment on the recording.
So there's going to be certain legacy apps, someone in the audience here, that there's legacy apps that depend on the file server. So if you're in a scenario like that, OneDrive doesn't fit that scenario right now. So that's another reason that legacy apps would keep you on the file server.
Comment about map drives is the other
one. I was just going to say that, you know, so earlier in my career, you know, 25 plus years ago, was working for the phone company, you know, Pac Bell, and, you know, there's just certain, we had policies in place, like we might have the latest technology, the latest the service things out there. We had strict policy on back it all up, store it until we know that we have the level of confidence in the new system. And you've just got to, you know, what data's on there, how can you afford to be without it if something happened? You know, manage that risk.
All right, let's go to the next question. We have, I think, three questions to wrap up.
I do have two questions. My
okay.
First question is, when will Office 365 features be fully supported on Chrome?
Chrome
browser.
That's a product team question, right? We don't.
What does not work? Because I'm using on a Mac Safari, which probably is the last browser that is officially on the top of the list, and I'm not seeing any issues.
So, for example, the drag and drop functionality works in Chrome, not in IE. Open with Windows Explorer works only in IE and not in Chrome.
Yep.
So that is, yeah, so.
Yeah, we would have to really defer that to that. Yeah. We're MVPs. We don't work for Microsoft. We may seem like it some days, but.
Don't know the answer, but yeah, we admire the question.
The crystal ball is only so deep, so.
That question about Open and Explorer was actually asked at the product team session at noon or something, you know, earlier.
Yep.
And they basically said that, you know, it's an ActiveX thing and there's no plans to port that forward. And, they want the functionality in the browser to be so strong that no one needs File Explorer.
Yeah, and that's, I think we'll start to see that with the other thing that Adam shared in the breakout that they had earlier. And if you guys are interested, there's a recording of that, and it was a product team breakout. So you got to ask all of these questions to the product team, and they could give you more specific answers than we can. A lot of us can just nod our heads and say, yes, we feel your pain. I think as they're moving forward with the modern list experience, the goal is to make that the same across all browsers, mm-hmm. and so that it is one experience no matter where you're at, because it's very jarring right now to be in one experience and something works, now you're in another environment and it's not working, but it should be working. And so I think as we start seeing with modern, we're gonna start to see all of those changes start to come and come into place.
Yeah. My second question is, again, going back to Office 365 services and SharePoint. So we have distribution groups, security groups, and now O365 groups. We have site collections, we have subsites. We have planner tasks, we have SharePoint tasks lists. So when do we use what? And going back to Benjamin's point about Yammer conversations and then Outlook conversations within O365. So people working in IT, I think it's pretty easy to get a hold of it, but what about people who are working in non-IT? How do we teach them training? I mean, are there any tips that you could maybe provide us?
This is a good one, so I think we're gonna start down the line and go. So Christian, do you wanna go first?
I'm actually gonna abstain from this answer. I have a different opinion altogether on that, but I'd love to chat with somebody offline.
All right, Sue, do you have thoughts on this?
I do, actually, because I think to some extent it's a little overwhelming to expect our end users to understand all the nuances of what's available. So I'd like to see, I'm a people person. I still think we need to ask people, what are you trying to accomplish? What are the business problems you're trying to solve? For whom are you trying to solve them? Are they cross-functional? Because we have a topic-based community of practice and we want to do some collaboration. Is it a team working on a deliverable with tasks that we want to manage? And I think the provisioning process should go through a front door where I can ask you those questions and then potentially route you to some options that you then use an internal partner, an IT partner, to help figure out which of the various options is the best way to solve your business problem. And there may be some common things that we can immediately provision for you based on some common actions. But we gotta know, is it mission critical? Does it need to be highly secure? And I don't think we should expect our end users to have to know all of the answers and keep on top of all that. I think that's what our job is, to help deliver the solution simply and quickly and easily so they don't go around us and go to the D word and start using things like Dropbox, right?
So then where does self-service of Office 365 fall in place?
So that's where I was actually gonna go with it. I mean, there, you know, I said it, Ben hit the nail on the head earlier with the group's conversation that, you know, went into a lot more detail. So I'm just gonna cover this off a little bit from the perspective of the right tool for the right job. Okay, they're self-service groups. You're not gonna change whether or not groups is using, you know, an Office 365 group context, right? That's the reality, that's what it's going to be. But there's structured content when you're looking at things, when you're looking at building out an intranet, and what should the viewers, you know, members versus viewers versus authors, et cetera. At that point, you're looking at a different type of security group, right? You're thinking back into the standard SharePoint world, as opposed to trying to pull over a different context. It's perfectly okay to take the context that you know and love today and allow that to be the case, okay? You could leverage Office 365 groups pretty much everywhere. Take that context, take that UPN and apply that as a group, you can. But there's also value in letting people work the way that they know how to work, right? So if somebody knows how to work inside of the SharePoint context and they know how to go in and set the right group, you know, with the right permissions inside of SharePoint, allow them the opportunity to do that. You know, users just want to get at their data. They don't care how it's gotten to them. They don't care where it lives. They just want to be able to get to it and make it easy. So, you know, I follow the KISS process. You know, keep it simple, Simon. Make it easy.
Anything to add, Ben?
No, I think it's 8 minutes. I want to make sure everybody gets their questions.
Yeah, no, I have nothing to add. Great answers, guys. We'll go over here and then over here.
Okay. So, Ben, I saw your talk with Tony about the Office 365 groups. And what I want to do is, you know, enable these self-service groups, which, you know, come with a team site and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But my Exchange team is worried, you know, that they will clutter up the gal. And so I saw that there are some features to, you know, enable these naming policies. Yeah. But I think from what I saw, you have to... the naming policies are tied to the Azure Active Directory properties or something. So does that mean that we have to go through all our users and like set some kind of property for every single user in Azure AD to make that naming policy work?
So you're talking about the group naming policy, or you're talking about the SMTP address of the groups?
Basically, I thought the naming policy defined like what shows up in the GAL.
No, so the group naming policy is for preventing bad words, for example, of being used inside the group name because it was used in education, and guess what? students named them in fun ways. And it's also to be able to add, for example, a prefix to every group that gets created. Now, the... it doesn't necessarily, yes, it will attach itself to the SMTP address a little bit because it's the first part of the group. The group name becomes the email address, but you can also add another type of policies that allows you to, it's called multi-domain support for Office 365 groups, and allows you to say, look, if these people create groups, it goes there type of thing, not physically, but in terms of the URL. And then if these type of people create groups, it goes there. It's not done one by one, it's done using their properties. For example, their department property. if they come from their students, or if they're marketing, or if they're whatever, you can put them in SMTP subdomain that is students. And if they're from the other one, you can put them somewhere else. And the group naming policy is really how you name the groups. It does affect the SMTP address. But I'll be very honest, and you probably saw it on stage already, Exchange versus SharePoint is going to be a thing. We got to talk to them. They're not happy. They're not used to having email addresses popping everywhere. And we are empowering people to do more work. And of course, that creates email addresses everywhere. So you're going to be, I hope you like your Exchange colleague. You're going to talk to them. Yeah, you're going to become the same team, absolutely.
That's awesome. We have 5 minutes, so we're going to try to go through the questions pretty quick.
All right, so this is more of your opinion and what I'm supposed to tell my end users. So one of the things they did in the cloud is that we can have columns that are actually mandated, like they have to fill it out, because we're huge meta data fans, right? But they don't require it now. So you can upload a document, and none of that information is filled out. And
how can people do that?
Yes, that and apparently that's the way it's supposed to work, because they don't want to impede uploading the document. But the problem is it's never getting tagged. So if I wanted to tell Microsoft that I think this is something I could change, how would I go about that?
Oh, I did.
I think there's a user voice out there, right?
So I don't understand the logic at all. If it's required, it's required.
Right, so required now is a suggestion.
Exactly, and the only way you know is
believe me, they know.
You hover over the little red thing, and it says, yes, it needs that, but...
User voice is going to be where you go. So I think we're all in agreement. You can see Susan is actually having a physical response.
That's what I have, because I didn't believe it. Yes. I really didn't believe it.
User voice is where you're going to be able to go to. So is everyone familiar with user voice? It's a site online. There's user voice for different categories of things, where you can go in and put your thoughts on what needs to be there, and then you have votes that you can give to other ideas and other things. So putting something in user voice, I'm sure that's already there, and I think a lot of us agree with your thing. There's a lot still coming with that new modern experience where that's one of those things. So you may be in a state where if modern doesn't work for what you need to do, then classic may have to be what you need to do.
Yeah, that's my answer to that question. It required should mean required.
Yeah.
And the inspiration apparently for taking that away was a blog post I did in 2008. And I was like, you cannot blame this on me. That isn't what I said. I didn't tell you to take it away. And so it may be that you can't take advantage of that because in your case, required has to mean required. But believe me, that voice, they know. I talked to the guy responsible for that.
He
believe me. But you should still put it in user voice, and everyone here should vote it up.
Yes, definitely.
So I'm real excited about the new modern SharePoint. We're an on-prem. We have SharePoint 2013 and 2010. What I'm wondering, and I did put it on Twitter too, is what do you do for having a sandbox or a QA environment with your solutions? Even if they're no-code solutions, you want to do them in a place that's not public?
So there are a number of different answers that I give to customers who ask this question. One is pay for a second subscription that models everything after and sync AD objects up. That's one option. That gives you that persistence and you don't have to go recreate things. The second option is trials, and do trials periodically. If you're not going to try things out for a period of time, let them expire and do a 90-day trial and see what's out there. Upload what you're trying to do and give it a test. Having one that persists is a nice thing as well. Especially in the case where you're not going to be in first release in your production tenant, as you're calling it. But having a first release tenant that you own, that you can turn on everything that you want to be able to see, highly recommend that. That's what we regularly tell customers. Customers who balk at that idea of having to pay, There's an option. You can go do another trial and see how it works for you. But it's not going to persist for you.
You don't have to provision it for every single user.
No,
right? You don't have to license it for every user. You have to license it for a decent subset.
Yeah, and you need to be able to have testers who can go in.
Right.
But no, I'm
That's a great idea. Because right now, I mean, you're paying for the servers that you're hosting your QA and your dev on. So
mitigate
that cost.
Yeah. Right. Just
and it's a second username and password that somebody's going to have to remember.
Right. Thanks.
All right, I think we've got one last question.
Hi. I use SharePoint Online. Right now I use Site Collections to manage my external sharing. I'm excited about the new features there. I've got a single Site Collection, which is the intranet part of my SharePoint. If I'm understanding correctly, pretty soon modern team sites will all come with a group and therefore be their own Site Collection. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something, or does this create kind of an administration nightmare? Am I just
going to
have more and more Site Collections?
Well, personally, the way I've been architecting SharePoint for team sites for organizations, that's the road that I've been taking for quite some time. Multiple, as horizontal as I could be, as many Site Collections as I could, ever since SharePoint 2013 came, because I had the power of search to pull the content I needed if I needed to serve it somewhere else. The reason for that is that I used to do that with a more vertical approach, sub-sites, and I've hit a lot of problems with that to manage on a vertical in a vertical way. Permissions management, features that get it pushed all the way down to all the sites when I didn't want it. The benefit for the vertical is the sharing of content types, and I found ways around that to be able to copy them across. But I've always been a big fan of isolating as much as possible, so it's actually the way I've been doing it. So I'm actually happy. Yes, there's management that goes around it, but it's been.
But you know, there's. I think there's a higher management cost when you and I'm not. I'm sure none of your organizations will do this, but like reorg, and move some of those things. But it's so much easier to do that and restructure, which happens constantly, especially in the larger organizations.
Plus, there's a limit on how many subsites you can. So.
Right, but the flatter you can make your IA, the more flexible it becomes. And, you know, I have clients that have travel lives under finance. Sometimes it lives under HR. Sometimes it lives under operations. And under is a navigational concept. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be a physical hierarchy. It's better if it isn't because you have a lot more flexibility. The challenge really is because you want to share things like security groups across Site Collections and branding. Which is a lot, and persistent navigation.
That is very important.
Right, and we don't, I ask that question, and I mean, I don't think there's a really great answer yet.
Yeah.
It's important. There's a management cost either
right,
way.
Either way, right. Yeah. Either way, there's a cost, right. Get over
I'm very,
it.
I'm very horizontal, but just under that one Site Collection, so not a tough change.
But you can still have a SharePoint Site Collection that is not connected to groups.
Oh yeah, right.
You could still do for that one a
for your
SharePoint
intranet. You actually will want to, those intranet sites, those publishing sites are probably not. They're going to need traditional SharePoint security because they are small number of people authoring, large number of people consuming. There's not a everyone is a member kind of concept. Right. So
we are going way over on time. So we're going to end with just one quick advice that you guys would give everyone over the next year, quick. I'm kind of just closing it out. What are your thoughts? What can you encourage people to do over the next year? And that will kind of wrap things up. And then we can stick around to answer extra questions.
I love this piece of advice. I'm giving it to my team, but pay attention to what's happening. I'd say subscribe to, follow the office blogs, for example. There is so much happening, and it can be overwhelming. And just make it part of, like I do, my daily information consumption about what's going on so that you can keep up and you'll better understand if you're proactive about that, kind of the impact as the various things come out.
He stole my idea. So that's the exact same thing I would recommend. So let's put a little structure around it. So I'll just riff on his idea. I think it takes a village to manage change in the context of Office 365. And everyone looks at it from a different lens. Mm-hmm. So I want you to have a team of people that are paying attention to the Office blogs, to the tech community, to user voice, to Twitter, to all the different places where changes are talked about. And the roadmap, of course, and everybody looks at it from a different lens. You have a OneNote to pull it all together, and that team should get together and talk about what did you learn, what's happening, who needs to worry.
They're starting to flash the lights on, so we better hurry up. I was going to use the tech communities. I was going to say join the conversation. But beyond that,
it really is, find your user group, okay? There are user groups in every city, and they're struggling. And why is that? Well, because we've all been, you know, thinking things are dead. And they're not dead, guys. Every SharePoint user group is not just SharePoint user group anymore. They're Office 365 as well. Find your user group in your local community, join the conversation, be a part of the solution, share with your knowledge with other people, and ask them the questions too.
And I would say learn to, I mean, not learn, but rather take a moment to step back and understand that things are changing. It's no longer just IT choosing a product, delivering. Business people can go out there and get whatever they want now. So understand that there is that part of it and why some of the things are happening, why groups is here, because otherwise they will become shadow IT and they will bypass you. It's been a growing problem, and that's why Office 365 has been going the way it has been.
And the last thing I'd say is just embrace change. So figure out how you can set up a test area, figure out how you can do these things. And when new features come out, embrace the change so that you can come back with the feedback that says, no, in order to actually use this in my environment, I need these three things. And here's how I could use this, and here's how I can do that. But don't let change happen to you. Embrace it, be familiar with what's coming, and be okay with it to try to figure out what's coming, and the end results are gonna be so much better for your organization. So thank you guys, we are done. We'll stick around if you guys have any questions, but thank you guys so much. Yeah.